Well, my name is Joan Barcroft, and I was born at 2 Church Street in Ramsbottom in 1933, June 3. It was a small back-to-back house with just a very small kitchen and a small living room, one bedroom, and the other bedroom was really just a big landing. It was the cooking was with the fire.
Did you have a range?
It was a range, a fire range. And the hot water, we just had to boil it as we needed it. I lived there, my brother was also born there 3 years later. And when I was about 4, we moved into 12 Church Street, which was what I call a proper house with a back door. We still had to share the communal yard, which we did at 2 Church Street, with outside toilets. The houses were rather damp, flat floors of course. Number 12 Church Street didn't get much sunshine except on the side window, which was the kitchen window. Again, it was a fire range.
Yes.
And gaslit, which the first house was also gaslit. In 1940, we moved to Garden Street, which is just a few yards away from Church Street. And that house had electric lighting. It got more sunshine. We still had a communal yard, but we had our own toilet, and it was a flush toilet. Because the others had been the tippler type and shared. So not very hygienic really. I know everybody tried to keep them as clean as they could. This house at 27 Garden Street, stayed there till, what year was it, 1993? And I moved here to Ashton Lodge. So I'm not really a wanderer. The house in Garden Street could still be damp too. Again, flag floors. They were over 100 years old. The houses where we lived in Church Street were demolished in 1960 about, or just 61, 62. And there are now flats there. There were about 18 houses all pulled down, Garden Street, Church Street and St Paul's Place, which they were very dark houses too, but they were demolished, as I say, in the early 60s, and there are now just 8 council flats there.
So could you tell me about your dad's jobs and things that he did have?
Well, my father started in the mill when he was about 12, part-time, school half a day, work half a day. And I think he still went in, he worked at Porritt's in Stubbins, because that's where they lived. And he went into the weaving again there. Now, I don't know what age he left there, but my grandfather was working for Anderton Stores, which was a grocery shop on Bridge Street. Number 72 Bridge Street, and he was a delivery man with horse and cart. So I know my dad went working there. I assume he started in the shop perhaps and then took over from granddad delivering. Eventually he still had the horse and cart, and then of course they got motorised, they had a van, a lorry as we called it, and he delivered miles around for Anderton's, all round as far as Holmshore, Holcombe, Nangreaves, Greenmount, Affetside. It was quite a big round, different days for different areas. Even in wartime they still went those distances after people had to register for the groceries. We used to help sometimes, my brother and I. We'd go with him sometimes in holidays. My brother went more often than I did. But we used to go into the shop sometimes and go upstairs where they packed up things in bags like sugar, dried fruits, tea, and we used to help. I sometimes wonder whether we did help or hinder a lot, but we were taught how to fold the bags in a certain way, which I found quite interesting. And the shop was very popular and always had the best of stuff. They used to have deliveries to the shop, of course, and there was a hoist at the side of the shop on Square Street with a drawer at the top, and they hauled stuff up, you know, sugar and stuff. And I can always remember going in the shop and seeing big pats of butter and marge and lard on the shelf, on the counter to be cut, you know, which you don't see now. I suppose that wasn't hygienic. Everything's shrink wrap nowadays, isn't it? But he worked there until, late 1950s. And decided he wanted to work inside. He'd had enough of working outside, because I can remember him getting wet through scores of times in winter, and in summer, of course, if it had rain, having to deliver orders. And I know that he had to dig himself out up on Helmshaw Road several times from the snow. It was not an easy job, really.
Yeah.
And I think he just felt he'd had enough, really. But even so, he only worked indoors about 3 years before he was taken ill. And that was it, you know. He died when he was 63. But he did work hard. He worked hard for us. And it was not a lot of money, you know, not very big pay.
Any idea about the wages, how much you would be paid?
I can remember something about £3 or something that was, you know,
yeah,
way back,
yeah,
when we were little, which he had to keep us, my mother and I. My mother did get a part-time cleaning job. That was during the war when she started doing that, because there was a shortage of, she worked at Holly Edge in Dundee Lane, and they used to have living maids, of course, but when the war came, these people had to go on to wartime jobs. So my mother got a job part-time, like 4 mornings a week cleaning there, with someone else was there too. But up to then they'd relied on Dad's wage, which, as I say, we didn't have very much at all. And if Dad was off work, that was it. The firm was okay, they used to pay his wages, I think, and then of course he was in the union,
yeah,
Transport and General Workers Union, I think it was. So, of course, he did get a bit of money from places like that,
yeah,
but it wasn't easy.
No.
It wasn't easy at all.
So we'll talk about cooking.
Right, well, as I said earlier, I think that we had what we call ranges, fire ranges, which was a fire in the middle with an oven on one side, and some had another compartment on the other side in which water, you put in water, and that was your hot water supply. We had those in two houses, and then in the third house in Garden Street we just had the range with an oven. Of course, you had to, when you wanted to bake or cook, you had to get the fire to a certain heat and really stoke it up. My mother used to bake quite a lot. She was a good baker. We always had things like a casserole, a stew, a hot pot. So we used to bake cakes, good cakes, gingerbreads, parkins, and fruit cake, as well as buns. And we used to also pies, various pies. She's also very good at making steamed puddings, suet puddings. Not very healthy wise, again, when you're thinking about starch, but at least we had good food. It was wholesome food, fresh food, because living near the shopping centre, we could get fresh stuff practically every day, meat, etc. Again, because of Dad's low wage, we didn't have expensive things. I seem to remember we did have a roast at the weekend, which we ate up on the Monday, with slices, we call them, potatoes sliced and fried, and the gravy that was left over from the weekend. But, yeah, Mum liked baking, but the ranges, of course, had to be black-leaded. Now, that's something I used to enjoy doing, strangely enough. And we had a brass fender round. But I used to enjoy blackleading. Dirty job, but it used to shine so much when we finished, and I think you'd done a good job, you know, when you saw it. And I used to enjoy doing it as a child. My mother used to let me do it, and I enjoyed it, strangely enough.
Did your mum teach you to bake?
Well, yes, I used to watch her and help,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And I still like baking myself, you know, making cakes. I'm not all that great, but I still enjoy making them, and I do my own baking as much as I can. But, yes, she did, and she used to be a cook, you see. She was brought up in domestic service, so of course she was brought up into that herself. Came from Cumberland, actually.
Right.
Came down this way for work, because there was nothing much at Cumberland, you see. Her sisters did the same, coming to this area, or Yorkshire, for domestic work.
Was she in service locally?
Yes. She was round and about. She started off round here in Burnley, and then moved to Worsley. They moved when they found perhaps a better job with a bit more cake. And then she came to Bury, and then she came to Ramsbottom working. She worked at the George Hotel in Bury, and then she came here into Ramsbottom to work at the Railway Hotel. And there they used to do a lot of dinners and lunches for business people then, in the 1920s, 30s. And I think they maybe had people staying overnight, you know, commercial travellers, with being so near the railway station. And so she worked there, and I assume that's where she met my dad.
Yeah.
When he went in for his pint.
That's right.
But, or two. So that was it. Yeah. So I don't know what year she came into Ramsbottom, actually. Perhaps about 1930.
So going back to domestic things, would she also use the range for ironing? Did she heat up, can you remember, did she heat up the iron on?
Yes, when we were living in the other houses without electricity, she had to have the flat irons, the big heavy flat irons, which you heated, of course, on the range, on the range somewhere. That's difficult. So you had to have a couple of those, really, have one getting hot while you're using one. Again, hard work. Because they are heavy.
Yeah.
We've got some at the Heritage Society now, and the weight of them, when you think about them, they must have had quite good muscles in the whichever arm they ironed with.
Yeah, that's right.
I've forgotten that.
And what about washing day? You were saying that she always had...
Washing day. Washing day was Monday. Always Monday. And it seemed to take all day, because you had to have a boiler, a gas boiler, which you had to fill and put all your washing in, let it boil. You also had a washing tub with a posser. You also had a mangle. I remember we had an old wooden one at one time. Then we modernised a bit, got a smaller one with rubber lingers, and eventually they got a washer, but this was rather in the garden house when we had the electric. But the gas, it was always, it just as well as you had stone floors, because they were always wet through anyway with the washing. And then you used to have a rack, a clothes rack, in the living room, or in the kitchen. Ours was in the living room, above the fire, of course, yeah. And you put your washing up there, pegged out, of course, if you could, but it had to air up above the fire.
Yeah.
And so it could, the whole house was a bit steamy and a bit damp on Monday.
So perhaps you could talk about people who came to the house didn't make deliveries or collections or...
Well, as regards collections, of course, we had insurance. My dad was a member of a trade union, so he used to come collecting. Also, we used to have to pay the doctor in those days, before the National Health Service came into being, and either I or my brother was always ill. If I got measles, he got it, and so forth. I had my tonsils out, so did he. So all that was to pay for. So each week we paid about a shilling or 1 and 6 a week, and a lady used to come around. Her husband was the doctor's chauffeur because he couldn't drive, and called Mr. and Mrs. Johnson, I think, Sammy Johnson. And I think maybe his wife helped to clean at the doctor's house and the doctor's surgery. But she used to come round every Friday collecting the money for any medical attention we'd have. So she was coming every Friday for years, unfortunately. And so you had to budget for that to start off with. To budget for your dad's trade union, and also for some insurance, of course. Deliveries, we had the coal man, of course, who used to come, I think he perhaps came every week. And the milkman, of course, came every day. The milkman used to come with horse and cart at first. And during the war, they used to come round with horse and cart. And then afterwards they graduated to motorised transport. But I don't think there were any other deliveries. We didn't have any other deliveries. I do remember the rag and bone man coming round, and used to go and anything, we were thrown out, and we'd get a donkey stone, which we used on the steps. That's another job I used to enjoy doing, scrubbing the front steps.
Yeah.
I must be mad.
Nobody does that now.
That must have been mad. But see, I think it's when you've done a job and you can see it looks clean and neat,
Yeah.
Going back to the milkman, he used to come around with a churn and a ladling can, as we called it, and ladle it out. No bottles then. So that's something that's gone, because I suppose that wasn't hygienic either.
So can we talk about how you got on as a family, all the four of you?
As a family, we got on very well. Of course, my brother and I used to squabble, as most children do. In fact, my mother used to say to me, or say to both of us, "I've never known a brother and sister like you. You're always falling out. Stop falling out." But strangely enough, I went into a house one day, years after, and I heard a lady saying exactly the same thing to her two, a boy and a girl, and I just laughed because I thought, I've heard that before. But yes, we got on very well. Mum and Dad were quite strict, of course, we had to do as we were told, and we weren't smacked often. We did get a smack if we were naughty or didn't do as we were told, but it wasn't anything much. And really, all we needed from Dad was, "That's enough," and we'd look at him and realise that it was enough. We hadn't to go on as we were. But although my brother and I squabbled, we always stuck up for one another. It's a strange relationship, isn't it? But they were strict, and to be quite honest, we knew that we had to do wrong, and whenever we went out anywhere, we didn't really do anything because we thought, everybody knows me, Dad. He works for Anderton, as you see, and he was quite well known in the area, of course. So I thought, somebody sure to see us that knows me, Dad, knows us, and that would be it. So we did used to behave when we went out. Not like they are today, unfortunately. But, you know, we were disciplined, yes. And we used to help in the house when we could, like washing up. Like I said, I used to help Mum baking. And, you know, clearing the table, setting the table, doing a bit of dusting maybe, polishing, that sort of thing. But we weren't made to do things. It was just that they used to say, well, will you do it? And we did it, you know. Like I say, I enjoyed black leading and scrubbing the front step, and, you know.
If we talk about the neighbourhood, were there any other members of your family living anywhere nearby?
Not nearby. The nearest was at Stubbins.
Right.
My dad's family were living at Stubbins on Bolton Road North. And so Grandma and one of his sisters lived there. She didn't marry. And next door to them was another of his sisters and a husband, and their son. And then later on they had a daughter. But when we were small, I was what, like 14 when Gwyneth was born. But during the war, it was just the three of them, and Grandma and Auntie. And there were cousins around, because we're quite a big family, Dad's family. Granddad's family, you know, about nine of them, who all lived round about this area. So Dad had a few cousins around us. But we didn't see a lot of them.
No.
But it was dark Grandma.
Did you go to visit her, or...?
She used to go visiting her, or they, she used to come to us, you know.
Right.
And Auntie did when she came down shopping. Mm. Grandma used to come sometimes when she went to the Sunshine Club we used to have in Ramsbottom at one time, and she used to come to that, and she'd call then sometimes.
Yeah.
She was about 79 when she died, and 1954 that she died, yeah.
And what about neighbours? How did you get on with the neighbours?
We had some very good neighbours. The ones at number 25, we had them for about 40 years. I were living there. And they had lived lower down, at number 29 they'd lived at, and then they came to live at 25. And they really were like another family to us. They were called Blake. And there were four sisters originally. One died quite young. They never married, any of them. Then there were just the three sisters. But they were extremely good. Smashing neighbours. We weren't always in one another's houses.
No.
But they were there when we needed them, or they needed us. And on the other side, at 29, it was a Mrs. Whittaker and her son, Tom, and they were also good neighbours.
So you helped each other out?
Yes, yeah. And, you know, we were, again, not in each other's houses, but just we were there,
yeah.
You know, and you could have a chat, you know, in the backyard or sat out the front if it was nice, you know. Yeah, yeah, they were extremely good. All round they were. Those in Garden Street, it was the row of five. There were two on the corner on Church Street, were two houses. And I know Mrs. Snowden lived in one of them, Mr. and Mrs. Snowden, and they were good neighbours. She was a jolly person, Mrs. Snowden. And then there were two houses round the corner on Rook Street. So, yeah, we got on very well with all the neighbours. Yeah. As regards the neighbours, there was no class. Because we were all working, the people worked in the mills,
yeah.
Or if they'd retired, they had worked in the mills. So there was no class at all. I don't know whether there is now in that area. I don't think there is now in that area, really. They're all what you call working class.
Were you aware, though, of people in Ramsbottom who were a higher class than you? Would you look up to people in certain areas?
Oh yes, definitely. Certainly. Like I say, my mother worked at Holly Edge. They were very, very nice people, Mr. and Mrs. Ewing. But he was the managing director at Hope Mill, is it called? It's now being demolished, actually, on Bolton Road West. It was the, used to call it the flannelette shop. And the BDA, Bradford Dyeing Association. Of course, they had a bit of money, you see. The same with doctors. You looked at, you respected doctors. You respected police, vicars, ministers, and people, business people, because they were a bit, well, you thought they were a little bit above you, even though they were still working for the living like you were, but they had better jobs and more money. So, yes, you respected them.
Right, so you said your brother was born 3 years after you. Can you...
Yes, he was. I'll go back first to when I was born. Apparently, we were both born at home, 2 Church Street. But when the doctor came, I'd already been born. And I had a lump on the middle of my forehead. And apparently, there was quite a row between the doctor and the midwife. Because they couldn't, they said that was dangerous, it was a vein or something. And he said that the midwife had got hold of my head as I was being born. And she said she hadn't, but she never got hold of a baby's head. So there was quite a fallout between them. So apparently a child had been born not long before me, or a few months before me, who'd had one of these, whatever they were, and he'd gone for an operation and he died. So the doctor advised my mother not to touch that and always be careful with it. So I always had a fringe when I was little. I don't remember the lump, but I can always remember my parents when I fell, keep your head up. And you know, that was the thing I always had to remember, keep your head up if you fall. And I think that was the reason why. I'll go back to that afterwards. But my brother was born just 3 weeks before my 3rd birthday. I didn't know anything about this, but I don't know where I'd been. I'd probably been at Stubbins at my grandma's for a day or two. And I was brought into the house, and the bed had been brought downstairs, and I couldn't understand this, and there was Mum in bed. And I was a bit frightened because I thought, what's to do that she's there? And then I saw this baby, so that was why the bed was downstairs. I assumed she'd just stop in bed a couple of weeks, you know, as they did then. When I was about five, I had to go and have my tonsils out, and we went into the Cottage Hospital on Luttall Lane, which is now a hospital for geriatrics, but then they did all sorts of operations. So I went in. I can remember going in to see this lady. It was obviously the matron. And there were 4 or 5 of us. I can remember who some of them were. And we were all lined up in front of her desk, and she was saying, "Now, I hope you be good boys and girls, because I always get to know, you know." So we just stared at her. And I can remember being taken into this big ward. It wouldn't be so big, I don't think, but it did look big to me, and then we to get undressed and go and have a bath. So I said, "I've already had a bath. My mum's given me a bath." "Yes, well, never mind, we'll have another one," you see. And I can remember being in this bath and the nurse bathing me. But the following day we went to have these operations. I can remember going in the operating theatre and something going over my face and sort of burning my throat and crying out, and somebody saying, you'll be alright, and that was it. When I came to, of course, there was a nurse at the side of me, and there was a lot of blood about. But I also remember a little incident when you hadn't to have a drink, you just to wash out your mouth, and there was a cup and a bowl at the side of your bed. And I fiddled around, got this bowl on my knee, washed my mouth out, put in the cup back and upset the bowl on the bedding, and, you know, feeling ready to weep. And there was an older girl in the next bed, further up, who had a little bell to ring whenever anything happened. So I remember the nurse coming fussing in and saying, "It's all right, don't cry, don't cry." I can remember nobody came to visit, you couldn't have visitors. And my throat wouldn't stop bleeding. So I had to stay in a day longer. But apparently the doctor had gone to see my parents after I'd had the operation and said I was fine, her throat was a mess, but she's fine now. And you'll be glad to know that this lump that I had on my forehead had gone. So I'm assuming that was where all the blood had come, a lot of blood had come from there. I don't know. Like I say, because my throat was quite a mess, I had to stay in a day longer than anyone else. Then when I came home, I had to stay in bed another 2 weeks because my throat wouldn't heal. And I was off school about a month altogether, while the others were back at school in a fortnight. I was off school, 5 or 6 weeks I was off school. But because it wouldn't heal. So of course we'd doctor's bills for all that. And my brother had his tonsils out and no problem. But I think my parents were worried because a cousin of my dad's had a daughter who had her tonsils out about 12 months before me. And unfortunately she died. I don't really know what happened. But so my parents were extra worried about me, especially when the have to be kept in bed and all the rest of it. I had the measles, I had chicken pox, I had German measles, I had mumps. Of course, every time I had something, my brother got it. And I was better and he started, so poor mum. You know, so the bed was seemed to be forever downstairs at one time. But we survived. It's just that it all had to be paid for. And all the medicines. Before I had my tonsils out, I was always having colds and coughs and going to the doctor, you know. So after that, we seemed to pick up a bit and were healthier, you know.
And when you had these childhood illnesses, you stayed in bed?
Oh yes, we had to stay in bed.
Yeah.
You weren't allowed out except for the bed to be made or something, you know. Yes, you were invalids, really.
Right.
Yeah. And also Dad had to have an operation for a hernia, and that was caused through work lifting something, one of the big boxes delivering something, and of course he was in hospital, had the operation, and he was an invalid of course when he came home for a week or two. Of course the firm paid his wages because done it at work.
Yes.
But then, just a few months after that, he got pneumonia. So again, doctor's bills again. And I can remember that was frightening, because he was coughing such a lot. And I had the bed downstairs with a big clothes maiden with a curtain hung over it to stop any drafts getting round to him. Today you'd just be rushed into hospital, wouldn't you?
That's right. Everybody was worried.
Yeah. Of course, it was M&B tablets that's all they could give you in those days. No penicillin then. That was before. That was 1939 when he had the pneumonia. And the first time out was walking across from number 12 to number 27 Garden Street in 1940, and sitting upstairs with the fire, a little fireplace in the bedroom upstairs, and just having. Sitting there while everybody else was running around moving furniture. It wasn't all work and no play. We did play around. We used to play out with neighbours' children, of course. And you could play out then without any problem. Go to the park if you wanted, with a group of you, not just on your own. But as regards playing at home, we always had toys, of course, and books. I always enjoyed reading. We also used to play games like Snakes and Ladders and little card games, Snap, you know, family games. It was just the family really, my brother and I and parents. Sometimes when if aunts called, then we'd play with them, you know. But with me it was dolls, I think, and my brother had a fort at one time and a farm yard type of thing. When you think about the toys they get today, I know we had, you know, homemade forts probably, and farmyard animals, soldiers, and, you know, dolls. I don't know, they have so many games today. Yeah. Used to do jigsaws and things like that. Yeah.
Did you make clothes for your dolls, or did someone else do that?
Yes, I used to knit little things, you know. But yeah, that was something else, used to knit a little bit. And sew a little bit, knit things like that. Yeah.
And did you ever have a radio?
We had a radio, but not till about, well, it would be after 1940, yeah, when we had a radio. When we got into the house where there was electric, where we could plug into, you know. I remember going to somebody's house before then, so we must still have been in number 12, listening to some broadcast or other. Perhaps it was the war thing we were listening to or something. But, yes, it was. It was Princess Elizabeth and Margaret when she made her speech, and that was about 1939 or early 40.
Yes.
But we didn't have a radio then because we went to someone else's house to listen to that. Yeah.
About newspapers? Would you have a newspaper at
this? Yes, I always had a daily paper. Dad used to get the daily paper, I don't know, was it Daily Herald, something like that. Used to get the Ramsbottom Observer every Friday, and we possibly got the Bury Times. I remember the Ramsbottom Observer because I used to have to go for it at Friday lunchtime at the newsagents, which is now the card shop on Bridge Street, the bottom of Bridge Street. That's why I remember Ramsbottom Observer.
Yeah. And what about games that you played outside with your friends? Can you remember any of them?
Skipping and hopscotch and that sort of thing, really.
Yes.
Nothing much, really. Yeah. But and falling out occasionally, you know, and then being friends again.
That's right. Yeah. Can you remember the names of any of your friends at that time, when you were a child?
Yes, there was Jean. Yes, there was Jean Knowles, there was Sheila Whitworth, Doreen Bowers. There were children who were at school as well. Some lived nearby. I still see some of them today, of course. They still live around here. But we always used to play round about home, you know, either in St Paul Street or in Garden Street.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't think there were any in Crawley. Oh yes, there's Barbara Cumberhall, Joan Savage. Still see them.
Yeah.
Still living around the area.
So can we talk about church and Sunday school and...
Well, of course, we lived in the shadow of St Paul's Church, and I was taken to Sunday school when I was about 3, I think, by a neighbour, Miss Crompton then. She was later Mrs Ramsbottom and lived in St Paul Street, and she used to take me because she was a teacher, of course. Then, we used to go every Sunday. And then we had the Whit Walks, which I remember. I don't remember much about Sunday school parties or anything, but I do remember the Whit Walks, and because we always dressed up. We always had a new dress and hat and new white shoes and socks, of course, and a little posy of flowers. And we used to walk from the school to the church for a little service, and then walk down Bridge Street, back up again, along Bolton Street, Callender Street, up Carr Bank, to one of the big houses up there where we used to sing, and we came back down from there. But the road up to Carr was just a cinder track then, and because we used to get cinders in our shoes. And coming down, it came down another way, another lane, and that was all pebbles, which was difficult to walk on. We then walked down Ramsbottom Lane, Stubbins Lane, as far as where the fire station is now. That was the church boundary. And turned round, back again, down Factory Street, Crow Lane, back to school, where the Mothers' Union had been there from about 6 o'clock in the morning making sandwiches and things. There used to be little meat pies as well, and buns, cake. We always had a band, of course, and they used to come in for their lunch and play sometimes in there. There was also, they used to have field days afterwards, and that was where the houses are on Heatherside Road now. I don't remember much about those field days, but you see, I was only 7 when the war started, and everything like that was put on hold. Later on, when we were walking, we used to go to St Paul's Vicarage, which is on Maple Grove off Bury New Road, and then come back, and again onto Bolton Street, Callender Street, down Carr Street. We didn't go up to Carr back then. Possibly those people have moved on or died. And then we still came down Ramsbottom Lane, Factory Street. No, we still walked to as far as the fire station, yes we did. The old tech was there at the time, the old school tech. And we then came back down Crow Lane to school. Again to have sandwiches, and then that seemed to stop. We didn't bother having lunches because the band used to go then. We started sharing the band with Hawkshaw Church. They walked in the afternoon. This was always on Whit Friday, and then later years it went to Whit Sunday, and later on it went to just a joint procession, which now is not much at all, not many people bother. But we do walk, and we have the service usually in the Memorial Gardens outside St Paul's Church. But it's not the same as it was at all. I don't know, it's just gone. But I kept on at Sunday school till I was 14, I was confirmed. I joined the church choir when I was 11, and I'm still there in the choir. But I think that we also had a players group, which put on 2 plays a year. I joined the players group, but I was only in 1 play. I wasn't really bothered about being on the stage. We used to help out behind scenes and brewing tea for the intervals and that sort of thing. What else was there? Was a badminton club, which I joined. I was a member there for about 2 years. Then when I was 16, I became a Sunday school teacher myself. And that went on till about 1980, when I finished as a Sunday school teacher. Unfortunately now there's no Sunday school. That's something else that's gone, It's a shame really, because the Sunday school is the church of the future. Difficult.
While we're thinking about festivals in the year, can you tell me a bit about how your family celebrated Christmas? Do you remember anything about that?
Yes, we always spent it at home, as I can remember. Possibly one of the aunts came or something, But of course we were always excited with our presents. But yeah, there were quiet Christmases, shall I say, not the parties that you have now those, but I know of course Mum had all the cooking to do. In fact, I can remember having to pluck the chickens, the day or so before, and clean them out and all that sort of thing. But I wouldn't like to do that, but used to be, there'd be feathers all over the kitchen. But luckily now they're all plucked and ready. But no, we didn't really do anything special except stay at home. We had a little Christmas tree, which had candles for lights, of course. And we always used to light the candles and put all the other lights out for a short time. Then they had to be blown out, of course, because they're always afraid of fire, and we're always disappointed about that. But so, well, you can have them on again tomorrow, you see. And we used to do that a short time each day, so they couldn't use them anymore. There was nothing very outstanding, except it was family, yes. You know, we were all together there.
Talk about any holidays that you went on?
The holidays we went on were mainly up to Cumberland, where my mother came from, because it was the only time we saw Grandma up there. And I used to enjoy going up there. When I was quite small, I had a whooping cough when I was about 18 months, 2 years old. And the doctor said to my mum, get her away somewhere for a few days, but not to Blackpool, for goodness sake, take her somewhere else. So my mother says, well, I thought about going up to Cumberland, best place. So apparently they took me up to Cumberland for a week or a couple of weeks. It is lovely air up there, and I always did feel better when I went up there, because we used to go every year. As I say, it was the only time we saw Grandma. And used to enjoy going. We used to go on the train from Manchester right through to Whitehaven, and we had to get the bus to Lampler and then walk about a mile and a quarter with the cases up to the house. Difficult, you know, you had to plan your day if you went out anywhere. We used to go down to Whitehaven on a Thursday, usually. That was market day at Whitehaven. I had an aunt also who lived at Cleeton Moor. Well, they used to usually come up on a Sunday. She and her husband used to come up every Sunday, I think, to see Grandma. And, of course, they came when we were there, and so we'd have tea, you know. We also perhaps travelled down to Cleeton Moor to see them one day. But we used to enjoy just playing out and going for walks up there, and going blueberry picking, I also remember when we went up there, we had to go perhaps for some extra milk. The milkman used to come round, but of course, with being there, we'd use it all sometimes, even if Grandma got extra. And so my brother and I used to walk down to the farm and with a little milk can and get some extra. I used to enjoy that. It was way out in the country. It's between Loweswater and Ennerdale, and with beautiful views all over, as far as you could see Scotland from there, the Stourway Firth in Scotland. Beautiful, really beautiful. The fells behind the house, you know. Really nice, really nice. And the houses were built by the local squire, whose two sons were killed in the First World War. And they had these, they were semi-bungalows, and they were for the widows of the parish. Grandma was widowed in 1914, not because of the war, but Grandad worked in the iron ore mine and damaged his hand, cut his hand or something, got septicemia, which killed him. So Grandma still had three children at home then, and so she had to work extremely hard, taking in washing and going to the big house, the squire's house, to clean and so forth. So when these houses were built, he gave Grandma the first choice of one. So she had a rent-free house. They were rent-free for the widows of the parish. But now I don't know who lives in them. They're not widows, they seem to be couples or small families. And they're not rent-free, of course. It's all changed. But they're nice little cottages. Big gardens. Grandma used to grow all her own vegetables and fruit, you know, everything. We used to help in the garden when we went there. Yeah. 1940 it was. The weather The main thing I can remember about the weather is 1940 when we had a terrific 1939-40 weather, a huge amount of snow, and I can remember walking up Church Street with snow piled high at the side of me. Somebody had dug a lane through, and walking up to school through this huge bank of snow on either side of me. I can't really remember anything else. I know when it was cold in winter time, our windows used to frost up because there was no central heating then, of course. And you know, you'd lovely patterns on your windows, especially the kitchen and the back bedroom. It was really frosted, and you couldn't see out.
No.
You just see these patterns of frost on the windows, and of course, things freezing up. But I can't really remember about good weather. I don't remember having to be staying in during the school holidays all that much because of weather. Mm. I think we always seem to be playing out and going to the park. And during wartime, we used to go to the park. We used to have these holiday at home things. And 1 week in August, when it was the main holiday, it was always August then. And they used to have concerts and bands in the park, yeah. You know.
Yeah.
There was always something going on.
Mm.
But weather, it's strange. People do say they can't remember having such bad weather, but we must have had something, but I can't remember it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Presumably, we just took it to our stride, really.
Yeah.
Right. So we can talk about school and the school that you went to.
I started school after the Easter holiday in 1937, just before my fourth birthday. And I can't remember the first day or anything about it, but I know it was a nursery class and the teacher was called Miss Hassel. Very nice little lady. And I do remember you could play in the sand with a sand pit, and you also learned to do things like fastening buttons. So I can remember little cards of things, and the buttons were on there with some sort of fastener, and you had to fasten those, and also how to learn to fasten shoelaces. Again, they were on cards with string or something through them, and I can remember my mother being there once watching me doing it. I know that in an afternoon we always had to have an hour's nap, and there were little folding cots. They were blue, if I remember rightly, and we all had a blue blanket with an animal motif on, like a rabbit or something like that, and we always had to have an hour right there. And of course when we were five we stopped that. And we had Miss Hassel then as a teacher too. And I don't remember a lot about writing. I always remember I could never do my figure eights properly, so I had to keep practicing figure eights. And used to have little jobs sometimes, like being a milk monitor. You had your turn, which means getting the milk out. You used to come in crates every morning, jill-sized bottles, and you had to deliver, you know, bring those out. And you all had your turn as milk monitor 1 week or something like that. Winter time, I can remember, the first room we were in, it had a fireplace, and they used to bring the milk in then to defrost it a bit, you know, stand it near the fire to warm it, because it did used to be frozen. I do remember that, yeah. Then we went into Miss Whittaker's class, and she was very good. We used to have birthday parties. When we were seven, we had to move into the big room, as we called it, and so we all used to have birthday parties. Mums used to make a cake, and I don't know whether they had to provide the sandwiches and biscuits. Perhaps they supplied the biscuits or something, and perhaps the school put the sandwiches on. But it used to be a little party, and we used to have our photographs taken, you know. I have one of when it was mine, And I've won when I was on someone else's party. It was okay. Then when I was 7, as I say, we moved into the big room, and Mr. Price was the headmaster. But he retired perhaps about 12 months after I'd gone there, and it was Mr. Lindley after that. The first teacher I had when I went in there was Mrs. Metcalf. We also had, Mrs. Metcalf, and we had a Mrs. Cunliffe. There was another teacher, Mrs. Barlow, and another teacher, Mrs. Cook, and there was Mr. Lindley. When I was 12, a new ruling came in that the school just had to be a primary school, and anybody 11 and over had to go to Peterborough Secondary Modern School. So that's what we did. It was a bit chaotic, I suppose, at first. I can imagine the teachers must have been overwhelmed up there, because there were different schools as well as I was, all having to do the same thing. And it must have been, they must have been at the wits' ends trying to sort of fit us all in, you know. And when I was 14, the year I was 14, they put the school leaving age up to 15, so I had to go until I was 15.
Did you mind that?
Yes and no. I think my mother minded it as much as anybody, because they thought, oh, we're going to get one working, you see, bring a bit more money in. But that year also, they brought in this child allowance thing, so Mum got 5 shillings a week she got from her brother, because I was still at school. But of course when I left school that stopped. So we had to go on another 12 months. We didn't really learn anything else. There were no more, we didn't have any extra things to learn. I think it was the first year, of course. There were no different books. We were using the same books for English and maths. Maybe it trained us a bit more, I don't know, but again the teachers must have had a hard time, because they didn't have anything extra worked out to give us, you know, extra books or anything, you know. You know, you thought that, well, you could have learned a language maybe, or some typing maybe, you know what I mean, but there's no extra lessons of any sort, just the same lessons from the same books that year anyway.
Yeah. Can you remember having any preparation for life after school?
Well, no, they just left you to it. There was none of this, discussions about your careers or anything. Mm. Of course, they just took it for granted that you went in the mill. Mm. The boys went into some trade, you know, apprenticing for something, and the girls went in the mills, which I did.
Yeah.
But there was no discussion about what you would do afterwards. No.
Did you have any domestic training?
Oh yes. We used to go down to the tech down on Stubbins Lane once a week for cooking, baking.
Right.
And we used to also get other instructions about cleaning, you know, cleaning up after we'd been cooking and that sort of thing. But we used to do sewing, of course. We had sewing lessons. And we used to learn about ironing and that sort of thing, how to iron properly,
yeah.
You know. But other than that, no.
If you go back to the first school, the primary school, you mentioned various rooms that you went into. Can you give me some idea of how big a building it was, how large a building?
Well, it's still there, actually.
Right.
And the little nursery class was just a wooden extension, which has been pulled down now a few years. The other room I went into was a large room, there was a partition down the middle of it, which could be made into a bigger room, but it was made into two classrooms that way. The big school, as we called it, there used to be a class in the hall, and there was a room above the stage. So there were three classrooms, all partitioned off. which could be moved when anything was had by the church or any other association. And there was a room above the stage, that was Mrs. Cook's room. I don't know, they seemed to cram us all in, these three classrooms, right. So they must have had a lot of pupils in, mustn't we, you know. At one time, I believe, they did used to have a class on the stage. We had a big stage, we used to have a class on there at one time. But I was never in a class on there. And never in the hall, mind you see. Like I said, they changed it. I left when I was, the year I was 12.
Yes.
So maybe it would have had to be that if they hadn't, if the government hadn't organised all this moving around.
Can you remember what you used to write when you first went to school? Did you have paper and pencil?
Oh yeah, we had paper. We had paper and pencil, which was rationed during the war, the paper. Right. We had to use both sides and do the things properly, and we got into trouble if we'd wasted paper during the war. And we used to have singing lessons. We were always patriotic songs, you know, there'll always be in England and fishermen of England and, you know, all that sort of thing. We used to have PE, that was in the hall. And Mr. Linder was very good. He was a bit theatrical and he used to do plays. I remember they did Shakespeare, like Merchants of Venice. I wasn't in that, but the older ones were in that. And did something about Mary Queen of Scots. I was in that, some sort of a serving maid, nothing to say, just being there. What else did we do? There was another one. Another Shakespeare one. He was very good at doing things like that. But it was always the older ones, you know, the 12s to 14s he had in those. And of course we used to have to sit and watch it, you know, afterwards, when they put the play on.
Yeah.
Very good. Yeah, yeah.
Did you have any favourite lessons? Was there anything you particularly enjoyed, or on the other hand, anything you really...
No, I don't think so. I just used to, I didn't mind school. I used to be reasonably good at maths and mental arithmetic. I used to be quite good at English. I wasn't too bad. But I enjoyed reading.
Yes.
And one thing I could never take to when I was at secondary school was science. Mm. Science always blinded me. I just hadn't a clue about science. I remember the last report I got, and it said something about, I was under 50 the march, you know, I was to 100. And the teacher had put very good, and I thought, well, he mustn't have been expecting me to get so many.
Yeah,
right. Dunce that I was.
We talked a bit about the building. Did it have outside toilets?
Oh yes. Yeah. Yes, yes. We used to play out in the yard, and there was a yard for the boys and one for the girls.
Right.
And the little ones used to play out a little bit sooner than the older school, so you know. But yes, there were outside toilets which used to freeze up in the winter. And, oh yeah.
Can you remember people, children getting into trouble? Rule about misbehaviour and what?
Oh yes, it used to be the cane or writing lines.
Yeah.
Usually.
Yeah.
There again at school, you know, to think, well, tell my mum and dad, you know, so you behaved yourself really if you could. But one of the teachers, Mrs. Cook, she was a tartar. She really was.
Right.
She once knocked a girl's head against the wall, I remember. She's such a temper. And she once hit me over the head. Again, I'm going back to, I wasted some paper. We were doing some sums, some maths, and I'd done something wrong. And she screwed it up. She was in such a mood. Obviously, other people hadn't been pleasing her either. And she threw it on the floor, and I thought, you're not supposed to waste that, you see. So I went to pick it up. Before that, she screwed it up, hit me on the head with a fist, and then threw the paper on the floor. Go sit down. So I went to sit down, and then I thought, oh, that have to use the other side of that, not waste it. And I got up to go for it and said, I told you to sit down, get down on the line. So I had to go down and stand on what they call the line in the hall. First time I'd ever done that. And Mr. Lindley came out to me. What are you doing there? So I told him I'd done this, some wrong, and Mrs. Cook wasn't very happy. Oh. So he went upstairs to see Mrs. Cook, and then he came down and said, right, go on back up. But, you know, it was things like that, but quite often I remember one parent coming to see Mrs. Cook because she'd hit, as a boy she'd hit about something. She could be quite, yes, yeah, she was a real terror. And even now, when I see these that used to be at school with me, and I was in Crawfield once, the confectioners, and one of them was actually working in at the time and serving, and there was another one in, and me, and they were having a bit of reckoning up, you know, what it was. And they were having a giggle, and I walked in and they said, we're just saying it's just that we can't add up now, it's just as well Mrs. Cook's not here. And it, that comes out quite a lot among us. Yeah. Yeah.
Families there, and can't make it through. But as far as we know, nobody's hurt.
Anyway, he went the following morning and no one was hurt. All the houses were a mess. The grandma and auntie and the other aunt, they all had to move out and stay with friends until the houses were repaired. So everyone was lucky really there, but the bomb was dropped into fields and in the riverbank and not on the main road. Otherwise, I don't really remember much about any more bombs around here. I know they had them at Tottington. That was 1944 Christmas. I remember seeing a photograph in the very town of St Anne's Church was damaged there. And the Christmas tree was still standing in the corner. And with rubble all around it, you know, and that wasn't damaged. But apart from that, of course we had shortages. We had to forget sweets, rationing, to really make things eke out. At one time you could go to one shop which was on Bolton Street. Maybe that was just after the war, my sweets were still rationed. And if you took a pound of sugar, you could have so many sweets. And there were boys to be which were made there on the premises. And there used to be always a queue when they said sweets, you know, bring a pound of sugar or whatever. And of course you paid as well, but to take some sugar so they could make some more sweets. I do remember that. I remember queuing up at the bread shop. That was Greenhouse, and that was also on Bolton Street. But other things, we did alright with cobweb and vegetables and that. But the meat was the main thing that we were short on. Remember we had plenty of corned beef, which put me off corned beef years after the war. Now I eat it, but years after I couldn't taste corned beef. But, you know, not a lot of memories, but the worst cares. And I remember Dad having to go to Manchester one time to get supplies for the shop, because they couldn't get people from there to come through. They'd had a real heavy bombing raid, and things were in a bit of a mess. And I remember my brother and I were having a bit of a squabble about over something or other. And Dad just said, "That won't do. There's a lot of little boys and girls who won't get any presents or anything for Christmas. And they haven't even got any homes to live in." And I can remember seeing his face and how afraid he and Mum must have been, because, you know, is that going to happen to us? And what could we do? You know, it did look very, very serious. So it, that quite kind of had an effect.
He'd obviously seen things in Manchester as well.
Yeah. Yeah, he was quite, yeah, when I think about the expression on his face, it was quite serious.
We're going to talk about leaving school. We've already talked about school, but leaving school and going to work. Can you talk about...
Well, I left at 15 and I went straight into the mill. I worked at Pemberton because I learned to read. And you learned in a little room actually there, and you were one of the three of us learning at the same time. And then you went downstairs into the big shed after about a month, I think, and you went on two loops. And then he went on four, and then six, finished up having eight. But I worked at Pemberton's for about 4 years, but the last 6 months I was there, we were on short time, 3 day a week. And we just started on a Friday and off again at Monday. And so that went on for 6 months, and quite a few people had left and gone to Stairsville, which was next door. And we're still only working 3 day a week. So someone who worked there, a friend of mine, said, "You're still on 3 days, you know, why don't you come in and see if you can get workers out of this?" So I did call in, and as it happened, there were six rooms, and the manager said, "You can start next Monday, you can have those six rooms." So I told the manager, Pemberton, and he said, "Yes, all right." They weren't stopping people from leaving. you know, you didn't have to work a week's notice or anything. And so I started at Stead, and I was there for 20 years until maybe London, 1972, and then closed. There were plenty of mills still open, short of workers because nobody was going into the cotton. So, you know, everybody was saying, oh yes, we need workers, etc. So I did get a job at Rose Mill, which is in Erwell Street, was in Erwell Street, Mansbottom, where now is Quicksilver. And I was there for about 3 years. That was a tower mill. I went first of all with a creeling and beaming. Creeling is setting up the warp for the weavers. And I enjoyed that job. It was something I'd never done before, and I really enjoyed it. During the beaming. And then, again, that mill had started to go down anyway, and they were short of weavers. So I went on to tower weaving, which was heavier. I didn't really enjoy it. So I stayed there, and then in 1975 I moved to field mill. That was plain weaving again. And I was okay there, but I thought, cotton's going down, I'm going to have to get out of it. So I applied for a business studies course at the college, which I got. I had to do a little exam first at the Labour Exchange, which was on Bridge Street in Mansbottom, which is now Menzies. And I passed it, of course, and started that in the January. And in the June, I got a job at Woodhead Iron Company in Yorkshire, in the office, in the production office at first. Then after 2 or 3 years I was moved into the accounts office. I was doing wages and sales, and then we went computerised, so I was on computers. So it's quite a change from weaving, running 8 looms, and sitting down at a computer. So quite a change. A lot of people said, you know, oh, I admire you doing that, you know, because I was about 40, 41 when I was learning. We did English and maths, shorthand, which I didn't pass, and typing, and general business studies for the 6 months course. Quite a number of people on it too, women, some my age, some a bit younger, and one or two older actually. But we're all trying to get out of one occupation, it wasn't doing well. So
it's very enterprising, isn't it?
Yeah. So I stayed at Woodhay. I was there for 14 years and then I finished there, and then I was on the dole actually for a few months. And I just got a part-time job at Howard's Estate Agents of Waterloo. So, I did things that I didn't think I could do. But the first day I was going to work at Woodhay, I mean, I had 2 interviews and we were all doing that. The first day I was going on the bus from here, at the bus to Bolton, and all I wanted to do was to go on to Bolton or get off before I got to Woodhay. I didn't want to go. And I was so nervous. But it was fine. I mean, it was a bit, my head was aching by the time I got home the first day, but I settled in and I enjoyed working there. They were a good company, time to work for.
Good.
It's still going, but it's wound down a lot, you know. Just how busy they are, I don't know. It's certainly nothing like it was.
Mm-hmm.
But I hope we can keep going because there are people round about who rely on. We did was bleaching and dyeing paper materials. But a lot of their customers have gone.
Yes.
Things again are changing.
Yeah.
I enjoyed the work. I didn't dislike weaving, but a lot of people in weaving and they hated it. And a lot said the reason a lot of it went down was the workers, is a lot of women said there's no way in her daughter's coming into this, because her daughter didn't. Because she did have to work hard, and your loom was stopped, your wages stopped, before this week too. And winter time, it could be really cold, and I think the lights have been nearly dropping off, you know. And in summertime, it was so hot.
And it was long hours, was it?
Yeah.
What time would you start in the morning?
When I first started, it was 7:30 to 5:30. You got an hour for at lunchtime.
Yeah.
And of course, you blew up when you wanted. There wasn't any of this, you know, only if there were certain times. Then they cut it back to about 5 o'clock. And then at the end of the work, when I finished the rose, it was 4:30, you know. And of course, it's only a week's holiday when I started. Certain days off, you know, Whit Friday and Easter Friday, Easter Monday. We'd always to work Trinity Monday when all the shops and banks and offices were closed. And then things gradually changed. You got extra days holiday through the union, and we got a fortnight holiday. We used to have 3 days in September, but that went into a week of course. So things did improve a lot. But when I first went to Stairs, it was still gaslit. That amazed me, and where they used to put a light on near the door at the entrance to the warehouse, and those who worked at that end, I did, to go to your tacker's bench, get a taper, light it, and light your lamp, and pass your taper down the alley to the but after about, I've been there about 2 years when they put the electric light.
It was quite dangerous, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was amazing. There was no gas lit.
It was with cotton.
Yeah.
It's floating around.
Yeah. And they were, of course, very, very old women at the university. Yeah, don't know, probably year old. And then it was still driven by water power. So if the river was high, it would clog everything up. Everything was going to restore and restore and change it. Knock your looms off quick, or else you have a mess. And the little shed there used to flood the stairs. Since then, they've worked on the river, lowered, you know, cleaned it out more than times. So I thought this was promising. Kenyon Street always used to flood whenever there was heavy rain, always, years ago. After a few years, they changed over to electric, the money for loops. So that stopped a lot of messing around, you know, with the boiler house and all that. I think this one we used to probably the thing that kept on as they were, other people still in the burner, you know, trying to retire. And of course you made a lot of friends.
Yes.
You know, and you all helped one another.
Yeah.
If anybody had a mess, you'd be setting their loons on while the others don't take it back. So you did help one another.
Yeah.
And I still see people then. Mm-hmm. There are two people living here in Ashton Lodge who I work with.
Yeah.
At Stairs. Yeah, happy memories, you know. Happy years.
Yeah.
As you say. Mm-hmm. We used to, we always had them all. Especially the tacker when it didn't prepare your room properly. But you also had the lamp.
Yeah.
And we always had a spree at Christmas, you know, the last day before we finished at Christmas. We had the lamp. We had the it wasn't all that bad. Certainly better than it was. Take some of these memories, because in a few years' time, people just go, oh, no, why did you talk to us?
That's right.
And that's why we like, at the Heritage Society, we like to get photographs, old photographs, with names on the back, if possible, so that, and you know, the places of where these people are happening.
That's right.
As a history.
That's right. Thank you very much, that's great.